Union Pacific railroad crews for a long time with a railroad contractor, and I've driven around a lot of those areas and seen what this industrial zone is in Portland, and there's a lot of it that's unused, and it's been developed in the past, and it's just sitting there empty. So I don't see any reason why we can't re-examine the ability to redo those facilities. I know that you'll have to dredge, but you'll have to do that at the island also. And so the expenses there, I don't see any justification for taking another area and then destroying that and leaving another area empty. There's too much of it now, and we should be able to develop what we have now.
Thank you for your testimony, and you did great. Hi.
Hi, I'm Barbara Wilson, and I live in Beaverton, and I represent myself. I am a wildlife advocate for those life forms that cannot speak for themselves. I hope to be a wildlife defender. I picked up a report off the web regarding this project, and I noticed that the word carrying capacity was not used, but the idea that a certain number of acres will support a certain numbers of species was mentioned. It's very definitive on 300 acres can support a certain number of wildlife. And if you destroy that 300 acres, you have destroyed the wildlife that was living there. So don't delude yourselves or rationalize that you think that wildlife is going to go somewhere else, because no, it isn't, because someplace else is already occupied by members of that species, and they will have to compete for space, for food, for shelter. So please understand that you hold life and death for that wildlife in that 300 acres. And please understand that this is not negotiable. This is the law of nature. Now, specifically, I want to talk about fish. The taxpayers pay millions of dollars in trying to figure out how to keep our fish runs healthy and sustaining. So why would we start talking about dredging and destroying a migration corridor for fish that will decrease the numbers of fish that can use that migration corridor? One quick question, and then I will be done here. How much taxpayer money goes to the Port of Portland to do all these things that they want to do, build bridges, build roads, build terminals, pay salaries? Is this done by the companies that are shippers, or does the taxpayer pick up those costs? Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir?
My name is Emil Combe, and I'm the principal for EMCO & Associates, which is a port strategic planning organization. I've spent about 35 years working in planning and development in the Northwest. Of that, 15 years in the port industry, and about 10 years working as an international consultant for the port authorities for the National Port Authority of Chile, the National Port Authority of Ecuador, the National Port Authority of Panama, and the other Central American ports that operate in the Caribbean. I'd like to state my major points that are in the written testimony that I'm going to submit as to why I oppose the development on West Hayden Island. There are a number of reasons for this, and I'm going to hit them briefly rather than spending a whole lot of time. The environmental and conservation reasons have been adequately covered already and will continue to be covered, so I'm not going to comment too much on those. Also, the need for parks and public access to the Columbia River in the north and northeast Portland area, I think, is another important factor that we need to look at. I think we need to recognize that current long-term cargo demand projections are based on historical and current economic conditions, and they don't take into consideration the global and environmental changes that are coming from global warming, from resource scarcity, and from continued environmental impacts that occur. And finally, I think we need to move away from the port facilities development, which is based on competition between public ports, and move into a more substantial regional paradigm about how we develop our ports and where the jobs are located. I think competition between cities and between organizations is less productive than looking at the region and the benefits that those, that are going to occur to the whole region. So thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you tonight, and appreciate all the work that you've done to move this process forward.
Thanks for your testimony. Thank all of you. Appreciate it very much.
Next four, two off the support list will be Michael Williams and Tom Chamberlain. And two off the opposed list, I didn't call you earlier, Alexandra Deal and Gordon Bussey. And they will be followed by Walt Evans, Steve Clark, Neil Schulman, and Susan Lindsay.
Mr. Chamberlain, welcome.
Mayor Adams, member of the commission, council. My name's Tom Chamberlain, and I'm honored to represent the 224,000 families of the Oregon AFL-CIO. Jobs and the environment can coexist. We need jobs desperately, and we don't have to sacrifice our livability for economic needs. But as much as we talk about green jobs in Oregon, we seem to focus on the green part a whole lot more than we do the jobs part. Now, I'm not going to repeat a lot of the testimony that I've heard tonight, that this land has been set aside for almost three decades for industrial development. But what I will talk to you about is what many of us are discouraged about. And that's the very fact that we're down to talking about using less than half of the available land for jobs. This isn't recognized by our opponents as an economic sacrifice or as a good faith effort to balance those interests. Those of us who want to keep this land in job production have already conceded over 500 acres. Why is it so unreasonable to keep 300 acres for job and trade? Why is any industrial development viewed as at best a necessary evil to be tolerated? When did middle-class blue-collar jobs become optional? We have high unemployment in this state, and we're a low-wage state. Workers in this state make 90% of the national wage average. We need jobs, and we need economic development to have a healthy community. To maintain Portland as a healthy community, you need a strong middle class to fund our essential services. Please support Mayor Adams' resolution and move this project forward. Thank you.
My name is Gordon Bussey, and I had a dynamite three-minute pitch for you, and I'm heartbroken that you're not going to hear it.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's all right. I'll bring it back 10 years from now.
Okay.
I have lived in a floating home for 20 years where I can see both Terminal 6 and West Hayden Island. And frankly, I'm here for the critters. Don't hurt me. If you take out 300 acres in the middle of the gem, you ruin it. It's an irreplaceable piece of Portland that can't be rebuilt. I was encouraged to hear about the Port of Portland and the Port of Vancouver corresponding, cooperating, being able to share revenues and jobs. I really urge you to look that direction. I think there comes a time when we must quit picking up pieces of land, using them up, leaving them there for somebody else to clean up in the future. And that's what we've done right down the rivers. It is my heartfelt hope that we can get back together when we know what the economy is and what the needs are. And in the meantime, let's look toward the Port of Vancouver-Portland cooperation. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You've whetted our appetite. We look forward to the...
Thank you very much. I'll put it in the family Bible.
Count on it.
Ma'am, how are you?
Hi, my name is Alexandra Deal, and I'm a double major of anthropology and urban studies at Smith College. in Massachusetts, so not technically a resident of the state. But I'm also the summer intern for Plan Green, which is a business that helps to bring communities sustainable ecosystem services. And I would like to stress that I come from a working class background. Many members of my family are or have been members of Union Pacific or iron workers. And I believe in jobs. I mean, I'm a senior in college, so I have to, because who's to know what's going to happen, especially in my life. But I believe in sustainable jobs. And therefore, it is my assertion that this land should be protected permanently, as it is a biological hotspot for a multifaceted display of wildlife habitats, as we've heard, as well as one of the largest unprotected areas left in the region. My understanding is that the location of West Hayden Island is in no place for industrial development. Numerous reports show the parcel is one that experiences occasional or periodic flooding. And in 1996, as I'm sure most people in this room know, all of West Hayden Island was more or less underwater. In addition to this, rezoning the land from farm forest to that of an industrial park is not economically viable. There will be a great expense in constructing not only this industrial development in such an isolated location, but the infrastructure that surrounds it. The city is required to provide infrastructure to new areas that they have annexed to the city, and this is probably about $150 million for streets, a new bridge, and utilities that will all be going towards a development in which there is really no economic demand. As one concerned citizen on the internet has asked, how would the cost of this new infrastructure affect the cost effectiveness of any potential future industrial projects on West Hayden Island? There is no economic demand for a development of this size in this particular location. But perhaps more importantly, there is no economic demand for what the port is claiming it wants to develop. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
May I be the first to say that although you're not from Oregon, I hope that your current summer employer gives you a full-time job so that you can become a resident of this state.
Thank you very much. I'd love to live here. It's a great place.
Sir.
Yes, my name is Mike Williams. I'm here as a representative of Oregon Business Development Department, formerly the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. The future development of West Hayden Island will likely prove to be a linchpin of the state of Oregon's critical supply chain connections to the world. A rail-served terminal will provide vital support to businesses important, the greater metro region, and industry across the state. It is important that the port and other industrial users have a sufficient supply of land to properly serve current and future industries. The land needs of key traded sector industries are increasing because of globalization. Larger facilities with very specific site needs in a few strategic markets is the current trends we are seeing for the most impactful recruitments. For example, the next wave of clean tech plants will be anchored by large 100 and 200 acre sites that will be served by efficient supply chain connections, and that includes ports and rail, and a host of smaller firms that are suppliers and technical service providers. The activity in the segment of the market has been robust nationally, despite the fact that we are experiencing one of the worst recessions since the Great Depression. The types of facilities that the Port of Portland is considering will support high-value industrial users like this, as well as high-value agricultural land throughout the region. And it would be a mistake to rule out or shortchange manufacturing and other industrial users as an economic engine for future economic growth. The location on West Hayden Island is unique because of its waterfront location near an existing Port of Portland facility, its access to the newly deepened river channel, and its adjacency to a mainline railroad. We encourage you to allow the Port of Portland enough flexibility to meet the needs of tomorrow. In the near future, we see changes in renewable energy and auto sector that could bring large-scale facilities that require high-throughput cargo through the port. But what are the long-term needs of industries 20 or 50 years from today? We cannot say for certain at Business Oregon, and they will be driven by changes in business practices, markets, and technology. So why not provide the Port of Portland the kind of land use, land supply flexibility it desires to properly serve these industry needs?
Thank you for your testimony.
Great. Thank you.
The next four.
Steve Clark, Walt Evans off the support list, and Neil Schulman and Susan Lindsay off the opposed list. They'll be followed by Brad Perkins, Jonathan Schulster, C. Lynn Sweeney, and Gary Banker.
Thank you for your patience this evening. Welcome to City Council. Welcome back for many of you. Mr. Clark, I believe you were first.
Mayor Adams, thank you, members of the council, for running a very well-run meeting. I am Steve Clark. I'm a Grain circa 1953 native son of North Portland. But tonight I appear before you as the chair of the Portland Business Alliance Land Use Task Force. As you know, the Alliance represents about 1,300 small, medium, and large businesses throughout the Portland region. According to the city's own analysis, Portland has a shortage of industrial land. As you've heard tonight, we are a region whose per capita income is slipping well behind other regions throughout the nation. And as we well know, for the next 20 years, according to economic studies by Econ Northwest, we're an income tax-based state who will not be able to afford to provide the essential public services that our state requires, that our citizens require. Annexing and zoning West Haden Island in conjunction with associated planning efforts will not only help address the city's industrial land and employment shortage, but at the same time will establish ongoing environmental protections that are very necessary and very appropriate on the island. The designation of a portion of West Haden Island for a viable marine terminal supports many of the City of Portland's economic and land use objectives. It will create approximately 1,400 jobs and up to 5,000 indirect jobs. This represents approximately one-half of the city's employment goal. Allowing 300 acres for a marine terminal is a good start, but the Alliance believes that we need to find a way to incorporate rail access into this area. Rail access will serve as an operational and a sustainability component as it contributes to a much smaller carbon footprint. The PBA is not alone in identifying the importance of international trade to the Portland region. A recent Brookings Institution report called Export Nation, How U.S. Metro Areas Lead National Export Growth and Boost Competitiveness, found that the Portland-Vancouver area is one of the nation's metropolitan leaders for exports. And this evaluation confirms that a significant share of the region's economy is tied and will be continued to be tied to international trade. We believe that having and investing in industrial employment land within close proximity to our most carbon-efficient transportation systems, such as rail and marine shipping, is essential. The annexation of West Haden Island, along with providing for environmentally responsive development restrictions on a portion of the island, is essential and a strategic decision. It will increase our limited supply of industrial land. It will help lay the foundation for increasing the number of living wage jobs within Portland, and it will help retain Portland's role as an international gateway.
So, Mr. Clark, Carla did not push the button because she's getting tired.
And I will close by saying thank you. We appreciate the resolution you bring and the efforts you're providing the city of Portland.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. I guesstimate that's about 2 minutes. Does it feel about 2 minutes? Do you feel cheated?
I do not.
Okay, good. Thank you for being here. Ms. Lindsay.
Thank you, Mary Adams. My name is Susan Lindsay. I'm a lifelong supporter of organized labor, the prevailing wage, and I've been the elected of my union, the grievance officer and vice president for the last decade. I've testified many times about the need for the creation of family wage jobs in the urban renewal area I represent. I like the Port of Portland, and I also like longshoremen. I, in fact, went to apply to become a longshoreman back in 1977, but unfortunately I wasn't allowed to apply because of my gender at that time. But in this case, I cannot support the proposed amendments, and my reasons are simple. Swan Island, Ross Island, the vast bottom lands of the area north of the St. John's Bridge, the long-term parking lots east of the airport, Airport Way, Tomahawk Island, Hayden Meadows, all that new shoreline development in Clark County. These and many more were all once heavily forested with cottonwoods and ash and rich with wetland wildlife, and they are all now cleared, paved, filled with roads, parking lots, big boxes, and or condos, including the aforementioned Terminal 6 facility, which used to be surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of acres of forest, which were all cut and paved for parking lots or future development. West Haden Island is not Forest Park. In fact, I would argue that it's more unique and more important. It is the last large, predominantly undeveloped tract of mature forest, wetlands, river, and shallows in the city. It is unique and it is irreplaceable. Perhaps if the other places were not already paved over, this might not have been such a concern. But they have been, they're gone, and I believe this place needs to be protected. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm Walt Evans, chair of the Pacific Northwest International Trade Association's Trade Policy Committee. My day job, I'm a lawyer across the street in Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt. On behalf of PNEDA, thank you for the opportunity to testify for the urge the city to adopt a West Hayden Island plan that embraces multiple uses that include development of new port facilities. PNEDA is our region's leading voice for expanding international trade for our city and our region. We want more people working in family wage jobs in port-related export and import activities. I submitted a short written statement. I ask you to read it. I'll just make four very quick points. Number one, international trade creates jobs that pay more than jobs not linked to trade. Portlanders cry out for more family wage jobs, and this project will help create them. Two, Port of Portland needs expanded facilities to serve existing and new customers. If we stand still and say our facilities are good enough, we will watch other West Coast ports thrive with more cargo and the family wage jobs that trade creates. Standing still is falling behind. Three, the deeper Columbia River Channel will attract deeper draft vessels. Local ports, the two states, and the federal government all invested in our region's future in international trade. Now we should help, not impede, our major port to expand to better utilize the deeper channel. And four, in closing, partnering between the city and the port can help develop environmental protection measures that are innovative elsewhere on Hayden Island. The port already has a track record as an early adopter of innovative environmental initiatives. WHI can be a showcase demonstrating how both port facilities and environmental enhancements cannot just coexist, but how both can thrive. The city and the port should work together to make it a reality. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and present PNEDA's views.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Hi.
I'm Neil Shulman. I'm representing the Oregon League of Conservation Voters. We represent the many thousands of Portlanders who care about the environment and the political process, and we urge you to fully protect West Hayden Island. A natural area this size, with the confluence of our two major rivers, is too valuable to convert to industry. West Hayden Island is six times the size of Oaks Bottom Wildlife Refuge, four times the size of Mount Tabor or Cooper Mountain, and over eight times the size of the nearest park nearby, which is Kelly Point Park. As has not been mentioned much this evening, it also lies in an area of the city that is parks poor. This was a bad idea when it was first proposed in 1997. It was a bad idea when it was proposed again in 1999 and 2000, and I believe it is still a bad idea now. It is simply not in the city's or in the public's best interest. Nor is the proposal to turn 300 acres, about the size of 200 city blocks, into industrial use viable. It brings to mind the analogy of splitting the baby. Fragmenting this valuable piece of habitat has already been talked about, so I will focus on a couple of other things. For 15 years, this region's strategy to preserving natural areas has been focusing on large parcels. As has been mentioned, this is one of the largest parcels left. It was entirely inundated during the 1996 flood. The city's climate action plan and Metro's Title 13 both established the critical importance of floodplains, as well as the likelihood of increasingly strong flood oscillations over the next several years as climate change occurs. And that is probably a bad recipe for industrial pollution. We know that our economic future lies in green jobs and the knowledge-based economy. I am for jobs just like everybody else is, and I think if we wanted to create jobs, and I think we should, I think we are missing an opportunity to do so through environmental restoration on both West Hayden Island and elsewhere that doesn't require the taxpayer-funded infrastructure. As Joe Courtwright from the Governor's Council on Economic Advisors said, the future of our region is sustainability, and that should not be viewed as an obstacle to economic development.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you all for your time this evening.
We have someone with a small child who would like to testify.
I heard some crying. I thought that was either Commissioner Fish or... Please come forward. Do we have evidence of your child?
No, I still have a child.
I'm teasing. Does anyone else want to testify associated with the child?
No, just me.
Well, welcome. Glad you're here.
My name is Julie Ahrens, and I'm a mom. And I brought him down, my one-year-old down, just as a reminder that what we do today affects tomorrow. I think undevelopment is the novelty these days.
Can you get closer to the mic? I couldn't hear you said in development?
Yeah, non-development. Undevelopment is the novelty these days. I've traveled the world, and everywhere I go, it just seems it's developed. And so here's an opportunity to leave it wild. I think children and people, we need space. Wildlife, we all need space. And development is everywhere. I think we can... we can develop other areas and leave alone what's wild now. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming to testify.
The next four are Brad Perkins, Jonathan Schulster, C. Lynn Sweeney, and Gary Banker. Those are the two opposers. And after them will be, I have two from the Not Sure, Josh Faber-Hammond, Scott Lukens. And then we'll take two more opposers, will be Chris Fountain and Don Baker.
So, welcome to the City Council. We appreciate your patience. Mr. Perkins.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure being here. My name's Brad Perkins. It is essential that we do all we can to improve our job situation. Hayden Island is an important land, but it's at a crossroads. And I believe, though, it could serve mixed uses. To get a better perspective, it is necessary to connect some dots and look outside the box or beyond Hayden Island. Look at the north-south I-5 and freight rail corridors, and look at the east-west Columbia River shipping needs in east-west freight rail corridors. Mm-hmm. Columbia River Corridor is the best on the West Coast for traveling by rail. There are no mountain passes, it's relatively flat, and it's the best shot from east to west or vice versa. Now, this is very important when we talk about moving freight from the Far East to the Midlands in America. If we can outcompete the rest of the ports, we're way ahead of the rest. Major high-speed rail improvements for passengers could be the key that helps create sustainable jobs, freight movement, and reduce CO2 emissions. There are two major needs for a high-speed rail system with train speeds of 150 miles per hour plus. First, there is a need for a new high bridge above the Columbia River next to the outdated Burlington Northern Bridge on Hayden Island for separate double tracks for both freight and passenger service. Secondly, the relocation of the Dreyfus Drain Storage Mill next to the Steel Bridge to a deeper port and better rail connections would serve two important purposes. Relocate an old facility to a better deep water port on the Columbia River and provide space and access for a new HSR station between Interstate and Willamette River that would connect with great multimodal transportation hub there at the Rose Quarter. And lastly, these core drillings that would be created from the new tunnels for the bridge could serve to rebuild the Ross Island Bridge. Ross Island. No one's talked about that, but it'd be nice to fill that, replace the need that has been used to dig out for gravel and replace it with these tailings. And lastly, there's a letter here today that I received from Gail Ackerman that talks about putting together a new committee statewide for getting money for high-speed rail development. We are on the move, okay? Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Mr. Perkins. Hi, welcome back.
Good evening, Mayor Adams. My name is Jonathan Schleter. I'm the Executive Director of Westside Economic Alliance, representing the businesses and communities on the west side of the Portland metro region. I'm here this evening because 105 companies in Washington County are shipping containerized freight over the docks of the Port of Portland. The vitality and health of the Port of Portland is key to the health and vitality of not only our regional economy, but our state. And in the statement that I'm having passed out to you now, there is an economic profile of our region that quantifies just the importance of that, that 50 cents of every dollar that this state collects as income tax comes from these three counties. So the success of our region and the decisions of this council are key to the economic health not only of our region, but of the entire state. Secondly, as Mr. Perkins so articulately just outlined, this is unique property with 814 acres under single ownership that has at-grade crossing of the Columbia River and the Cascade Mountain Range. No other port on the western United States, Canada, or Mexico can offer 814 acres in one package with access to five interstate highways, U.S. highways, two Class 1 rail carriers, international airport access, and deep water marine draft. That is unique to the Port of Portland, and it would be a mistake to squander that opportunity. Number three, our region has just exhausted itself in a three-year land use planning process to designate the urban and rural reserves around our region, where we should grow, where we should not grow for the next 50 years. We agreed that we needed to hold the urban growth boundary firm, that we needed to infill, redevelop, reclaim, and redevelop brownfield sites before we go expanding over the farmland of Washington County, Clackamas County, or the timberland of Multnomah County. Mm-hmm. The very same groups who are here tonight in testifying in opposition to this resolution are the very same ones who are lined up in front of LCDC to oppose the urban-rural reserves that have been designated around this region. We feel that's very unfortunate, but it tests the credibility of our decision-making process and the policy that we've chosen. Let us ask the question, if not here, and if not on Hayden Island, and if not in the core of our urban centers, where will this urban infrastructure and where will this urban development be allowed? Thank you for your time.
Thanks for your testimony. Hi, welcome to City Council.
Thank you. I'm Gary Banker. I've lived in Portland for about 13 years, and it's terrific here. And when I think about what makes Portland a great place to live, I mean, one of the things I think about is our tradition of trying to work together and find compromise and consensus. And I think the proposal that you have before you is trying to find compromise, but I don't think that compromise is possible. And I think when you look at the report of the working group, you'll see that. I think the members of the working group who are representative of groups who will profit from the port all are convinced that this compromise is possible, that we can have a port and preserve the habitat. But I think that the environmentalists and those with expertise in habitat preservation on the working group, all of them oppose this proposal that's in front of you. And when I look around the room and when I hear the testimony from proponents for the port, the strength of their, they favor that so strongly that I'm convinced that they would favor it whether it's 200 acres of West Hayden Island or 400 acres, or 600 acres, or 800 acres. So as much as I admire consensus and compromise, I think the resolution before you is really not realistic. And if I can go to the more difficult decision that you may face of development or preservation, I think about the other things that make Portland such a wonderful place to live, things like Forest Park, things like the green space along the Willamette. And I know those were very difficult decisions for the members of council 25 and 50 and 75 years ago. But I think even the proponents of the development of West Hayden Island would say that they made wise decisions in preserving that space for us to enjoy now. Thanks.
Thanks for your testimony. I appreciate it. Lynn?
Hi, my name's Lynn Sweeney. I live in Southeast Portland, and I'm a volunteer at the Audubon Society of Portland. We don't need another bridge. We need to preserve West Hayden Island as a floodplain with all its shallow river habitat for the fish. The Port of Portland and the Port of Vancouver have not coordinated their facilities adequately. A job in Portland is equal to a job in Vancouver. It shouldn't be a competition. Building port facilities on West Hayden Island is a bad idea. I urge the council to save West Hayden Island from development. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for spending time with us. How many more do we have? So we're going to take a five-minute break. It is now 8:43. We will see you back here at 8:48 while we figure out.
How many more are left?
A lot.
I didn't even know about this until
All right, Portland City Council will come back from recess. We're going to take this next panel of input.
We should have Josh Faber-Hammond, Scott Lukens, those are the not sure people, Chris Fountain, and Don Banker, and they'll be followed.
Okay. Well, we're going to have a pause and have some questions potentially for the port, for staff, maybe for folks on the environmental side, but we're going to take a pause before it gets too late. And we lose, we've lost about 2/3 of our people. This is normal.
We've lost half of our council. That's normal.
I'm trying to buy some time so they can come back. If anyone has signed up to testify and you're on the upper gallery, if you could find a seat downstairs so we'll save each other some time. And I have to wait till I have a third person up here before we can take your testimony.
He's back here.
I thought they were in the room. Is he in the room?
He's in the room.
Okay. Which one is it?
Fish.
Commissioner Fish. Commissioner Fish.
Here.
Thank you. He's within earshot, so if it's okay with you, we'll go ahead and begin. I think your name was first on the list.
My name is Scott Lukens. I'm a small business owner in Portland, and I've lived in the Portland area for over 25 years. It's been interesting to listen to the testimony tonight. I strongly believe that developing West Hayden Island is a move in the wrong direction. I think it's an inefficient use of our land, especially from what I've heard tonight, given the available land that's not being fully utilized right now. I also believe it's clear that losing the habitat, this is irreplaceable habitat, is something that we could look back on in 20, 25 years when our children are older and see it as a significant mistake. I think that I feel strongly that my business is in large part successful because of the values and the work of our city leaders and citizens over the years. My business is a business that sells actually birdseed, and I bring that up because I have colleagues around the nation who have similar businesses, and they are always amazed at the number of rail cars of bird seed that we sell in the Portland area. I know, it is kind of funny. My wife laughed at me when I first proposed this business idea a few years ago. So I know that the people, the citizens, my point is that the citizens, my customers that shop in our stores around the Portland area value the green habitat, the sustainability, and the work that we've all done to make this city as livable and wonderful as it is. And I hope that you'll seriously consider that there are many, many thousands of people that value Portland for what it is today.
Thank you very much for your testimony, sir.
Hi, my name is Josh Faber-Hammond, and I'm a Washington State University grad student right across the river there.
Go Cougars.
Yeah, I guess. apart from any thesis work.
Heartfelt. That was heartfelt.
I was being charitable by saying go Cougars to begin
kind
with.
That kind of team spirit, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Go Cougars.
We won't count that against your time.
Fantastic.
Scratch you from the Alumni Association.
I've given them enough money. So apart from any thesis work I've been doing, I've actually also interned with Metro for the last year and a half. And for the record, I'm also speaking on my own behalf, not Metro's, and on behalf of the research I've done with them. So for the last year and a half, I've been doing a project to identify actual and potential habitat for the northern red-legged frog through scientific GIS analysis. And this species is state-listed as threatened So I won't bore you too much with the scientific method that I've done so far, but Metro has a data set showing thousands of egg mass locations from the better part of the last decade. And with this information, I was actually able to find optimal aspects of habitat from a variety of maps from USGS, Metro, City of Portland, and the list goes on. So with these optimal aspects, I was actually able to combine them together, and where they overlap, generated a optimal habitat map over the entire Tri-County region. And there are limitations to extrapolation for sure, and I conducted a ground truthing analysis that I'm still trying to finish up. And basically, it's a quality control measure to see the limitations of this extrapolation. But initial results do show that West Haden Island is largely top-tier habitat for this state-listed species, and it's in a high concentration. And in other words, West Haden Island is one of the larger blocks of continuous red-legged frog habitat out in the metro region. Largely, I just wanted to let interested parties know that this research exists, and even though it's unpublished, I'd like to get it published as soon as my graduate time allows. So,
great. Thanks for being here and to share that with us, and good luck on the rest of your studies.
Thank you. Go Cougars.
Hi, my name is Chris Fountain, and recently there were more e-books sold on Amazon.com than there were hardcovers. So none of us expected that 5 years ago. Who knows what's going to happen in the shipping industry as a result of economics, which are certainly precarious at this point, or technology. And in the years that it will take for the port to identify a client and know exactly what that client needs and how they need to use the land and how much land they need to use, things may change considerably. We really can't afford to play fast and loose with our finite resources. So please, let's not move forward with a plan before we know the entire economic and environmental implications. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Hi.
Hi. I'm Dawn Banker, and I'm actually married to one of the previous speakers in the last group, and I never let him have the last word.
The key to a successful marriage.
I am, as you can see, opposed to the resolution.
Was he for the resolution?
No. Oh, okay. Then there would be a problem to develop West Haden Island, and that's, I think you've heard enough testimony of the reasons why.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And in that spirit, and given the time, while we have some Q&A from council, if there is any with staff or Chair Squire, if an argument has already been made, if an issue has already been put forth, if a question has already been asked, then I would ask that you defer when your name is called. But it is your right even to repeat, but that's a request I make. Given the time of night, I leave it up to you to decide whether or not you want to heed my request. If you have a new issue, a new question or something like, then definitely we want to hear you. We're going to try to speed testimony up after we have some panel of discussions. Again, this is on the sort of honor system here. So
I had one other comment, Mayor.
Yep.
In my 2 years, I don't remember an incident where the rough balance of who was speaking and for or against when they have this many people had a big impact on how the council evaluated the merits of the arguments. So I know sometimes there's a sense that, well, we want to get our troops out and have 100 people say the same thing just to show the strength. There are times where the mayor actually has said, with all those people in the room who actually share a particular point of view, stand or so designate, so there's strength in numbers, but not necessarily having a record replete with the same arguments. So I would also join what he said, that if there are new arguments or new concerns, that's enormously helpful. But if it's a repeat of things that have been said, it's your call, but there may be other ways to signify where you are on that. So thank you.
So again, that'll be the honor system. You've just heard some advice based on what we find to be effective this time of night. In the meantime, if we could have Eric, you come forward. Chair Squire, if you wouldn't mind coming forward. I think you have a question for the port.
I do.
So representative from the port. Mr. Wyatt, if you wouldn't mind coming forward. Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Well, Eric, I've been taking notes on many of the concerns that have been raised, and it seems to me that our resolution does call for further evaluation of the air quality on West Hayden Island, on East Hayden Island, if West Hayden Island were to be developed. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes. And I would also point out that one of the reports prepared by staff already and available is a larger overview of quality of life issues that could impact the neighborhood, including air quality issues associated with ports. So we've done an initial scan of kind of what those issues may be, and we're well prepared to do follow-up work in terms of more details.
And that's the resolution does call for that, just basing it on the local impact study that you've prepared, but also saying that, that more needs to be done. Because I was in particular interested in the possible impact the air pollution from I-5, the possible impacts of a larger bridge, and the particular value of the trees and other vegetation on West Hayden Island compared with the rest of the region. So that's going to be part of the further study if we approve this resolution.
It can be if you're requesting.
I would take that as a request.
Thank you. So, Mr. Wyatt, I had a couple of questions for the port. How much fill might be placed on this site?
The fillmeister will join me here.
So a two-part question then. How much fill might be placed on this site to address the floodplain issue, and how is the fill that you're currently placing there through the dredging currently permitted?
To the first question, Sebastian Deegans, again, for the record. On a 300-acre parcel, roughly would require about 4.5 million cubic yards of fill.
And how would that get there?
Well, approximately 25 to 30% would come from the dredging of the marine facilities that would be associated with that. The balance of the fill would need to be brought in either through the maintenance activities of the Columbia River Channel. That's roughly, so that that's been a source of fill in the past.
Is that trucked or barged, or how does?
Typically, it's been just piped right to the
pipeline
site.
Dredge.
And what's the permitting process for doing that?
Well, I think there's several different components to that, Commissioner. The way the majority of the fill has been placed on the site to date has been through the Corps of Engineers, Federal Navigation, Channel Maintenance Dredging, and the permitting for that has been through the feasibility study and the associated EIS and all the permitting for the 43-foot channel. That included a 20-year maintenance plan that assumed maintenance to be going onto the dredge material placement site. Prior to that, a similar process was used for the 40-foot channel.
So if the purpose of this fill was to actually remove some of the floodplain, would there be a new permitting process required for this 4.5 million cubic yards of fill?
For material placed from channel maintenance, no. That material the site is actually was identified in the EIS and the feasibility study as a beneficial use site because of its potential for reuse as fill for such purposes. There have been other sources of fill that have been used both at the Port of Vancouver and the Port of Portland, and that have been borrow dredging. That would be a separate. Need to be a separate permitted activity and would go through all the same processes through the NEPA analysis, through federal and state permitting. And that's how the majority of fill was placed on Rivergate. I'm not saying that that would need to be the case here. It would really need to be a balancing of what's coming from maintenance over time and what would be the deficit.
I see. Thank you very much. And then the other question I have for the port is whether you intend to use or rent the proposed facility and if you have any concept of what kind of commodities it might be used for.
So all of our marine terminals are leased in one way or other, and I think reference was made to Terminal 6 earlier this evening. And Terminal 6 actually has three different pieces to it, and I just do this by way of example. At one end, we have the Hyundai Auto Import facility. That's actually leased to a company called Auto Warehousing. They have a separate contract with Hyundai Automobile. And then in the center is the container facility, which we have just recently leased, a long-term lease, to ICTSI, which is the fourth largest independent container terminal operating company in the world. And by the way, the single largest financial transaction in the history of the marine port. So this is a big deal for us. And at the other end, Honda. Each of them stevedore, in other words, they employ longshoremen in different ways. The port does not employ longshoremen directly, nor does any port up and down the West Coast. So we need to find someone to do that. There are very, very few publicly operated marine terminals, meaning by a public authority, on the West Coast. By the same token, we own the land, and it's our policy not to sell marine industrial land. We don't, and because it's so incredibly valuable. Having said that, we obviously have a lot to do with how they're developed, what happens there, what occurs there. So we would definitely look for a tenant. A lot of money is there. I mean, a lot of conversation this evening about taxpayer dollars. And obviously, to the extent that a new bridge is built onto West Haden Island, there may well be tax resources there. But at the port, 97% of our revenues come from business transactions of one sort or another. And so we do have a property tax in the three-county jurisdiction here. It's very modest. It's the smallest, I think, you will find on your property tax bills, and it's not getting any larger. So we have to find alternate resources for development purposes, and that typically comes from private parties. So in question about commodities or products, in large measure, that is being defined as we speak, in a sense, because through the proposed resolution, as the mayor has suggested and as you all have amended, we're kind of defining the types of things that can happen there. It won't be a container terminal because a container terminal requires probably a 2,000 meter sheet pile wall, and that just isn't going to work on Haden Island. Limiting, for example, the onshore, nearshore habitat impact means building out into the river over that, essentially. So all of those factors, limiting truck traffic through the center of the island, means that truck-related cargoes, for example, are going to be discouraged for obvious reasons. That means that the terminals on West Haden Island would be rail-oriented products and or commodities. I'll give you one example. I think when I was testifying, a fellow right next to me said he wasn't aware that we'd lost any business. Well, we have lost business. We lost an enormous prospect 2 years ago. We spent, I don't know, probably the better part of a year working with a combination, Itochu Bungi, which is Bungi is a U.S.-based firm, Itochu is a Japanese company, who were looking at the old grain terminal at Terminal 4 to build a new grain facility. And for a variety of reasons, they decided that it was not possible. And one of the reasons was the track situation would not accommodate large loop tracks. It didn't have joint facility access, so it was not jointly served by both the BN and the UP. Big rail users like to have joint access because they can then get the best rail rates for their facilities. So after a year and considerable effort, they went down to Longview, and they're in the process now of completing what will be about a $200 million state-of-the-art grain terminal that is driven primarily by the export of soybeans from the United States to China. Soybeans are the largest export by value and volume from the United States to China. It's a commodity that 10 years ago was not taken into consideration when the economic analysis was done for the channel. So for the channel deepening project, my point here is this. We've seen constant and steady growth and new commodities and new products evolve and develop and come into the market. But I think that's an example. Grain is a very good example of the kind of activity that would be ideally suited for a terminal on West Haden Island, because it doesn't involve the kind of dock facilities that would impede the shoreline. It is rail-oriented, and it requires, I think, to Commissioner Saltzman's friendly amendment, we consider it friendly, deep water navigation access. Autos, much has been made about autos, and I would invite anybody to go see the Toyota facility at Terminal 4. The buildings there are LEED-certified buildings. It is a green terminal. It was completed back in 2004, but Toyota isn't all that excited about importing Hondas at their terminal, or Hyundais, or Nissans, for that matter. And Portland, because of the rail connections that we have here, is ideally suited as a gateway for automobiles. Nissan, which I think you know is going to be introducing the Leaf here, has made contact with us about the possibility of using Portland as a gateway, something I think they really discovered as a result of their interest in electric vehicle infrastructure and introducing their Leaf here. That's just a sample.
Thank you.
The concern, and we can post it online, there are a number of issues and questions raised that I'll email staff, and then we can post those online. The idea that if the council, whatever decision eventually the council makes regarding the how to bring this part of the island into the city, and I do think we need to make a decision one way or another, how permanent can that decision be, whether it's all environmental, whether it's co-use, how there's been concern raised and on email traffic as well. So how permanent can that decision be?
I assume that question was directed at me. But
yes.
When you annex a property, you're going to be looking at an annexation agreement and then comprehensive plan designations. And so, you know, you will set in motion a set of infrastructure decisions and the designation of the land for zoning. A future council could change those designations, but again, once you've set some of that in motion and invested in infrastructure, that becomes less likely. We've also put in the resolution the direction to look at how the open space portion of the site would be managed and in terms of ownership and covenants and things like that. And so you can set up structures that would, ownership structures and conservation easements and agreements related to that would lock down your open space decision, if I assume that's what you were asking about.
And one question, I've not heard this before, and I'm sure you've all briefed me on it, but it didn't stick, and that was the current zone of the island can be used for residential, I think?
It's currently zoned with a Multnomah County designation, and the city of Portland actually administers that through an agreement with the county, but it is farm forest residential right now. I don't think the port's planning on using it for that purpose, but I think you actually heard from somebody who had lived out there, and it has been used for cattle before.
Is there Holly Marins who said that?
Yeah. So...
Okay. So, thanks.
I have one more question.
And then Commissioner Fish.
Thank you. So the question for staff is about the Lower Cromelia River Estuary Partnership representative talked about the BIOP, the biological opinion. And it's my understanding that the U.S. Corps of Engineers, the federal Bonneville Power Administration, Washington Fish and Wildlife Crest, and others are looking for restoration sites to fulfill those federal